The Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is back, and thank you so much for being with us again this week. I am your co-host, Arthur Arkish, joined by Hub Arkish, getting ready to talk a little bit of Bears football. Hub is joining us on this podcast from the downtown, the Comcast television studio, Hub?
I believe they're NBC Sports these days, but that is where I'm at.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in from the NBC Sports studio. We're recording from all kinds of studios today. We were at WCIU earlier, and everyone's on the go, but we didn't want that to prevent us from bringing you a podcast about the riveting, what are they, the 3-9 Chicago Bears. Where do we go from here? I don't really know that anyone cares about a Bears-Bengals preview. I mean, what's interesting with this club at this point, other than talking about a coaching search that can't officially get underway just yet?
Well, I think everything points to the future. You know, right now, the bottom line is that we all assume there will be a change with the head coach, and therefore most likely close to the entire staff, if not all of it. I think it continues to be interesting to me why Vic Fangio wouldn't be a target to be part of the future, whether it's as a head coach or retaining him as defensive coordinator, although what we're hearing is that that is not likely. And so you begin to think about who will be the new coaches, and then you look at the roster and you want to know how many of these guys are worth keeping. How close is this football team? You know, John Fox apparently went out of his way on Thursday to point out to the media that 9 of the Bears games have come down to one score and that they've lost them. Remember last year, all but one of the Oakland Raiders road victories, 7 of them came down to one score, and they won all 7 of them. And then you see what happened to the Raiders this year. You look at the New York Giants last year and what happened to them this year. There's no reason that the Chicago Bears turnaround can't be quick if they put the right coaches in place and if there is as much talent on this roster already as some people, and I emphasize some people, seem to think there might be.
Yeah, it's good points there. It's a little ironic that you mentioned the Raiders, because I'm totally unconvinced that they have the right coach in Jack Del Rio. And although his gambling ways did contribute to a lot of those wins last year, I think we both know Derek Carr is what contributed the most to those wins. So I guess maybe that's where the hope comes in, Hub, is that Mitch Trubisky is going to take a giant step in year two. I found a stat interesting. It didn't require a deep dive, but from Sunday's game, what do you make of the fact that Mitch Trubisky had both his career-high passer rating and his career-low in passing yards on the same day? What does that say to you?
The same thing that I have been making of the Chicago Bears offense since training camp of 2016. They hired the wrong offensive coordinator. It's Dowell Loggins is in over his head. This team's offense does not have an identity. They don't appear to have a scheme. There's no rhyme or reason to the play calling. There are a lot of excuses made for things that don't work out. You know, we hear so much about the injuries with this football team, but until this week, almost all the injuries were on defense. You know, now Kyle Long is done, and of course you lost your receivers in training camp, but that was training camp. And so, I think that you have to be intrigued by Mitch Trubisky at this point. He shares many of the same traits that Jay Cutler has, and nobody argues that Jay Cutler had the physical tools to be an elite passer. Cutler didn't have the head for it. Trubisky is showing an impressive fairly mature head for a kid just out of school with almost no college experience. He definitely has much better athletic traits, throwing traits, than a Rex Grossman or a Brian Hoyer or a Josh McCown or even a Jim McMahon. And so, you know, where the comparison becomes relevant, if it becomes relevant, when you look at teams like the Giants and Raiders that have bounced from, you know, 3 or 4 wins to 11 or 12 and then unfortunately bounced back, is that they had Derek Carr and they had Eli Manning. Now, if in fact Mitch Trubisky can take a step next year like you've seen from Carson Wentz and Jared Goff this year, then there's reason to believe that the Bears may not be as far away, you know, as some of us think they are, depending on who's going to run that offense and who's going to help get Mitch Trubisky to the next step.
You know, Hub, a few weeks ago we talked about how Bears fans could kind of get a potential glimpse of their future maybe out in Philadelphia, and Bears fans will want to tune in out in L.A. this week once again because, of course, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz will square off. That also means Frank Reich and John DeFilippo and Matt LaFleur and Sean McVay, some hot coaching names. And it's just a good opportunity to watch what actual innovative offense looks like because, as you said, that has been a bit of a, you know, it really hasn't been here. It's been mostly invisible. So anyway, you mentioned Kyle Longhub. He's Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish. Yes, we're related. Yes, it's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. And thank you for being with us, because I know it's it feels like a death march at this point with the Bears, but we're trying to keep it fresh and talk about what's important. And Hub, Kyle Long's injury is obviously very important. John Fox wouldn't say for sure if he was going to need surgery on the shoulder. He obviously has put that off for 2 years now, needed to get the ankle done last season. Actually, he turned 29 Tuesday, the same day he went on injured reserve. And after starting, what, I think it was 47 out of 48 games, or appearing in 47 out of 48 games to begin his career, he's been quite limited the past couple. Is there any reason to be concerned? And Kyle's going to work as hard as anyone there is. He is as impressive of an athlete and a football player as anyone in that locker room. But the numbers are the numbers, and after a guy has not been on the field for so long, is there any reason to worry that we may not see the Kyle Long we saw the first couple years in the league again?
You know, my understanding is that this trip to IR is because of a re-injury to the shoulder that he chose not to have surgery on last offseason. If he has the surgery, the shoulder should be fine. What was troubling with Kyle all year long is that it appeared that the ankle had never returned to anywhere near 100%, and he did have surgery on that this past offseason. Now, the question is, will more rehab help that ankle? Is there a cleanup procedure that can be done? I'm not nearly as worried about the shoulder as I continue to be about what we were not able to see him do this year because of his slow rehabilitation from the ankle. If the ankle can get back to 85, 90, 95%, then there's no reason to believe that Kyle Long doesn't have a couple more Pro Bowls in his future.
And just to make sure we have the numbers correct here, it was 47 to 48 in the first 3 years, all ending in Pro Bowls, of course. Last year he's been limited to 18 games out of a possible, of course, 32 is what it'll end up being. So I think it's a good segue, Hub. Our guy Greg Gabriel has kind of shifted his focus a little bit to Bears offseason needs. Greg's going to be hammering the draft like no other, so you're obviously going to want to keep it tuned in to Pro Football Weekly and get ready for some awesome draft coverage, both at the website and in our magazines this offseason. We're really looking forward to upping our game another level even. But Greg did a piece for us in this week's insert that could be found in the Northwest Herald, the Daily Herald, and papers all over the state of Illinois about the Bears' top offseason needs. And, Hub, I think need number one, it actually surprised me a little bit, and I'm sure it surprised a lot of the readers even more. I'm segueing from the Kyle Long discussion, so why don't you fill the listeners in on what Greg views as the number one need that Ryan Pace or someone else is going to need to attack with the Bears this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised that somebody with over 30 years of NFL scouting history, a guy who was the Bears director of college personnel for almost a decade, agreed with me. I've been saying it for 2 years. I think the Bears' greatest need on offense is a left tackle. And you know, Charles Long is a good kid, and I'm happy for him that he got the money, $20 million guaranteed. I didn't understand it. It doesn't bother me because the reality is it's not outrageous money for a left tackle in the NFL. It's not like they mortgaged the future the way they did on Jay Cutler at quarterback a few years ago. But I think it's been proven this year what we should have seen coming into the season. His ceiling is to be a mediocre left tackle, and he hasn't been that. And I'm not aware of a great offense that doesn't have a great left tackle. And for the most part, not always, you get a Jason Peters once in a while, but for the most part, the franchise left tackles come with top 10, top 15 picks. So Greg, in his column looking at the Bears' needs, said that, sure, you need wide receivers, but you don't need them as desperately as people think. If you can bring Dontrell Inman back, if Cam Meredith does 100% rehab, Kevin White's going to get on the field. We'll see what he can do. Even Kendall Wright's got football left in him. If you put some other receivers around him, I'd still bring in more. I don't, you know, count on Marcus Wheaton. But Greg's position was that the Bears' greatest need is at left tackle. Second greatest need would be at wide receiver. And then they've got to get more depth on the offensive line. And until Adam Shaheen proves he's the answer at tight end, they got to get better there too.
Yeah, it was fascinating. He did say offensive tackles. He also stressed that because of Kyle Long's injuries, frankly, and again, we all hope he's going to turn out to be the same mauler and you know, potential all-pro that we saw early on in his career, but because he's become a little bit less dependable, that they really need a swing interior guy, too, and that's going to be a fairly high need. You know, wide receiver, it still does rank high, and I'm not thinking Kendall Wright is really anyone that you're going to want out there. They need to upgrade over him, too. They can't count on Kevin White anymore. Cameron Meredith, hopefully, we'll see. But that's kind of where they're at on offense. On defense, you know, they need a cornerback. They still need a playmaker in the secondary. And pass rush, unfortunately, despite all of the resources that have been poured into the edge rush on this team, Pernell McPhee could be on the way out the door. Leonard Floyd has shown super bright flashes, but obviously two seasons for him now, both ending on injured reserve. So what do you think about just the need? And it sounds like a broken record because Ryan Pace, I think, said this two Januaries ago, how they needed to get more playmakers, and that still ranks pretty high up on the list when we talk about those two positions in particular.
But yeah, let me back up for just a minute because I want to make sure I report, you know, Greg's words accurately and what he wrote. He actually said offensive tackle, but he suggested a right tackle. And I went back and watched some more tape, and this is one where, you know, occasionally Greg and I are going to disagree. I think Bobby Massey's fine. You can win with Bobby Massey. I don't know if he's ever gone to a Pro Bowl, probably not. But he has been more than acceptable this year. You know, again, you're not asking for nearly as much out of your right tackle as your left tackle. In Greg's column, he's focused on the offense. I think he's going to focus on the defense next week. But there is no question that the defense, on both sides of the football, they need playmakers. That's the bottom line. They need wide receivers. Of course they need wide receivers. Is Kendall Wright a long-term answer? No, he's absolutely not. But I think the point that Greg was trying to make is that Adam Thielen, who is arguably the best receiver in football this year, is an undrafted rookie free agent. Juju Smith-Schuster, the Bears passed in the second round. He fell to the bottom of the second round. We can detail this all we want. You get great franchise receivers in the first round, but you can also get them in the third, the sixth, and the seventh, and you just don't have to use what looks right now like a top six pick there. When he writes about defense, I expect he's going to completely agree with you. I think the cornerback position really is going to depend a lot on do they re-sign free agent Kyle Fuller? Do they re-sign free agent Prince Amukamara? What do they have in Craven LeBlanc, who I think shows some real flashes as a nickelback? So does Bryce Callahan, but not only does Bryce Callahan, it's 2 years ago, he can't stay on the football field. And then Marcus Cooper, I think, is capable of better football than he's played. So the need at cornerback is going to be dictated by what they do in free agency. There's no question that even if Leonard Floyd becomes the player that they hoped he'd be, they need another pass rusher. I don't see Pernell McPhee back with this team next year. I'm not sure how. And I think they're really good up front, but in the 30 front, you're not expecting to get sacks from your defensive linemen. You know, you'll think of that to come from your edge rushers, your sub packages with your more traditional 40 front defensive ends and your linebackers. So they absolutely have to come up with a pass rusher. And one other thing I want to throw in, because it just occurred to me we have it. We should tell everybody that we are brought to them each week on this podcast by Loot Crate. A surprise you know is coming, so make sure that you get to lootcrate.com and check out those special surprises.
So, Hub, do you think that let's stick with the corner position for a minute because it seems like maybe as much as anywhere else is going to be up in the air. You got Prince Amukamara on a one-year deal. He's played pretty solid football. He's not really the playmaker that we're talking about, but he's pretty good in coverage. He seems like he can stick his nose in as a run defender. Kyle Fuller is really sticking his nose in as a run defender. I wish that some of these near interceptions with Kyle would turn into actual picks, but... what do you think they do? And Marcus Cooper is an interesting guy, but he hasn't been healthy, and when he hasn't played well. So I don't know how you can really count on him a whole lot, although he did get a contract. I think he got the third most guaranteed money of any of the deals that Pace handed out last year. So he's going to be back, we know. But what about those other guys? Would you try and re-sign Prince? I know what you've said about Kyle Fuller on this podcast repeatedly, but it'll be interesting to see if he's going to price himself out of here.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is Kyle Fuller is going to be very expensive. If I'm the Bears and I'm re-signing one of my two free agent cornerbacks, because I do want to see more of Marcus Cooper than I try and get Fuller. Fuller's 25 years old, Amukamara is 28. The other thing is that while Amukamara has been a little more physical this year, he came to Chicago with a reputation as a 7-year veteran in the league who isn't wild about sticking his head in. That's one of the reasons he got out of New York and had a year in Jacksonville. Hasn't been bad this year. I think he's played well for the Bears, but when you look at how physically Fuller is playing and the fact that he's only 25 years old, and you've already got a first-round pick invested in him, I would love to see him bring Fuller back on the hope that he will stay healthy and he's not one of these guys who has to be 100% healthy to play. The other thing, Arthur, is I don't know, you know, if anybody's kidding themselves, they're not set at the safety position. You know, I thought Quentin Betts was a bad signing. Now he's going to be 33 years old next year. I still am intrigued by DeAndre Hall, by Deion Bush, by Houston Carson, but I don't know. I mean, Eddie Jackson, I think, is going to be one of your safeties for the next 3, 5, 8 years, but they need somebody to go with him. So I think you have to really talk draft needs, look as much secondary as just focusing necessarily on quarterback.
Did you purposely leave Adrian Amos off your rundown there, or is he is the jury reconvened on Adrian Amos, Hub?
I thought he came back when Demps went down. He reclaimed his starting position, played 2 really solid games. And again, I try to watch this tape every week. And then after that, he became Adrian Amos again. I think he's a guy. I think you'll find these guys on a lot of rosters as the third or fourth safety. The idea that he and Jackson can be your twin safeties back there on a playoff contending defense, I don't see it. I Amos came in with a rep as a guy who played some corner at Penn State, would be really good in coverage at the position, and coverage is one of the areas where he has struggled. So we're talking 3 years now, and I just haven't seen the consistency that tells me that he's a guy that you want to be one of your starting safeties.
As far as Kyle Fuller is concerned, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride for him during his time here in Chicago. Of course, a Phil Emery pick, 14th overall. He looked like he was going to be a Hall of Famer in his first 3 weeks in the NFL. Has the big game in San Francisco, plays well against New York. It goes downhill from there. Everyone knows the story already, but he misses all of last season. It seems like his confidence is in need of repair. Seems like he's gotten it fixed. But now if there's going to be a new coaching staff, I don't know. Do you think we could see a situation where Kyle Fuller kind of goes the Alshon Jeffrey route and potentially jumps ship and thinks he wants a fresh start?
You know, we don't know what's in these kids' minds, Arthur. We visited with Kyle on Monday, and he was asked the question by one of the other media members, do you want to be in Chicago? And he said quite simply, yes. Kyle is not exactly what you would call an extrovert. he's hard to get answers out of. And so with some other player, you might read into that almost some sullenness, maybe almost some wisecracking, like, you know, no, not really. I don't read that at all with Kyle. The problem is he's very hard to read, period. But my guess is in this particular situation, with the success he's had this year, if the Bears are prepared to pay him like the top corner, there's no reason that he wouldn't want to stick around. And I think the key here is that we can speculate and guess all we want as to his health and whether he's going to stay healthy. But at the end of the day, the way he is playing, if there's a comp, it's Peanut Tillman. I mean, I have not seen a Bears corner play this physically and yet be this dependable in coverage since Charles Tillman was here. And even the whole time that Charles Tillman was here, they struggled to match up with him on the other side. Tim Jennings was out there, but Jennings was always undersized, and you could get physical with him. Receivers are not getting physical with Kyle Fuller. So, you have to decide if you're more disturbed by his first 3 years in the league than you are impressed by his fourth year. But I can promise you there's going to be more than one or two teams out there, if he hits the free agent market, who are going to be pretty impressed with this fourth year. Stephon Gilmore just got $42 million guaranteed from the New England Patriots and never had a season in the NFL as good as the season that Kyle Fuller has had this year. So I'm not the president of the Kyle Fuller fan club. If I was there, I'd be careful about this because, you know, you've already spent some bad money on Mike Glennon. But I think you've got to take a hard look at it because with the performance he's had this year, those kind of corners are hard to come by.
All right, so 2 more quick things on Kyle Fuller. We don't have a ton of time left. It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, but and you may have just been kind of alluding to it. How concerning does it need to be that the light seems to have fully come on in a contract year? Because we've seen that with other guys, and again, we're only speculating. We only know so much about Kyle. And then the other part is I think I have to disagree on Stephon Gilmore only because I think he's had a couple good years with really good ball production, which we haven't seen from Fuller yet. Do you think there's a chance his agents may say, go and try and do what Alshon did, not only stay healthy but put up some big numbers? Jeffrey just got paid halfway through that prove-it season with the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have to. Corners like this are hard to find.
Sure.
Jeffrey, wide receivers, as we've already discussed, are a different kind of cat. And so somebody is going to pay him. Now, the contract year aspect of it, certainly it's concerning. But – Had he been healthy last year, would he have done it last year? I don't know. You know, did he get caught up in the coaching change when the John Hoke slash Mark Trestman regime left and the Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell regime came in? I don't know. I asked him specifically about Ed Donatell on Monday, and he was very complimentary of Donatell and how much he's helped him and how much he likes playing for him. So it was really interesting. It was Vic Fangio last year who, you know, publicly – He didn't slam him, but he didn't coddle him either, you know. And he said some things that people wondered if there was an issue between the two. There's no issue between them this year. So, you know, listen, I'm not going to pretend to be able to read the kid's mind. I don't know if he wants to be here or not. But I do know that when we look at the Bears' various needs, to have him here and to let him get away and go out and try and replicate him, when we know how hard this is to do during the draft and free agency. And let's be honest, I don't think that the Pace's free agency signings have been as bad and mass as some people claim they are, but he has had some misses. And so, you know, they say the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So if the only devilish part of this is the injuries, that's why I think they're best served taking a chance on him and then, you know, taking their risks elsewhere.
So Kyle does have a career high in passes defense, 13 of them, but obviously just the one interception. It looks like Gilmore had 5 picks and 30 passes defense over the past 2 years combined. But I don't know if it's going to be Gilmore money. You're right, though. It is a premium position, unlike wide receiver, and there are going to be teams hungry out there for a guy like Kyle Fuller who looks like he's just coming into his prime. So just a couple minutes left, Hub. At Halas Hall today, Vic Fangio was asked point blank, how does he kind of guard against his players getting complacent or going in the tank at this point in the season? And I found it to be a little refreshing. Vic always is, but just the fact that that conversation is out there at this point, and Prince Amakamura spoke on it too, saying they kind of owe it to themselves. And what's your take on that? Obviously the coaches know, but the players must know too when they turn on the film and they see whether a teammate is giving his all or not. Is there a sign or two that you'll be looking for down the stretch, or is there really a way to truly know, maybe to a more casual observer, whether this team is still playing for each other in a lost season?
Well, you know, they can talk about playing for each other all they want, Arthur. The reality is, with all the injuries, there are very few guys they're going to suit up in the next 4 games who are guaranteed to be in the NFL next year. You know, some of the higher draft picks obviously are going to be back, but they're fighting for spots on the depth chart. And everybody else is just fighting to keep their job, you know, to stay in the league. And we know what a fragile thing this is. So it shouldn't take a ton of, excitement or a ton of pep talks from coaches to go out and play your best football. I think the better question is, are the coaches going to put him in a position to be successful? You know, and I think we've seen Vic Fangio will on defense. I mean, he'll have them where they need to be. So if you're watching the Bears defense, you're watching to see how many of these kids make plays given the chance. I mean, you've given a great example. Kyle Fuller can't just get his hands on balls. He's got to catch them. Guys can't just fill the right gap. They've got to stop the ball carrier in the gap. When you flip it around offensively, I'm not sure how much we can count on these kids for, because I'm not sure how often they're going to get a chance to do something significant. One of the things that this Bears offense just doesn't do is try and push the ball down the field. And until you start pushing the ball down the field, even if you're not successful with it, you're going to create some space underneath. And until you complete a few down the field, you know, you're just allowing defenses to stack and take away Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. So can they come up with a plan that allows these kids to be successful? And if you see them doing some different things, getting the ball down the field, then you can start to look at the production and say who's capable of it and who's not.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Marcus Wheaton probably is a prime example of someone that they need to get out there to see if they can, like, get vertical with this offense. And we've heard some what I think are fairly lame excuses in recent weeks. He just hasn't had enough practice time, I thought I read this week. And, you know, that may be true, but here we are in early December, and if he's healthy enough to go, as limited as this offense is, man, it would be nice to see Marcus Wheaton out there and maybe give defenses something to think about, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem with John Fox and his staff. Is I believe it was Foxy on Monday who said, you know, one of the disappointing things about the game Sunday was Marcus Wheaton only got one snap. Well, whose fault is that?
Yeah.
You know, put him on the football field. And then you ask the question, well, why? Well, it's because he hasn't been able to practice the routes as much. He hasn't been able to do this. This is a 4-year veteran. I mean, you know, Dontrell Inman came over from another team and became your best receiver in 1 week. And so... that's the kind of stuff you hear that has people assuming they have to make a coaching change when the head coach is blaming somebody else for an expensive free agent receiver who's not getting on the field.
Yeah. All right, let's close with this. He's Hub. I'm Arthur. Thank you very much for being with us this week. Just either, I don't know if they needed to be talked off the ledge. I don't know if they should be on the ledge. But do you think there's any correlation? We've now seen big moves. We've seen the Giants and the Browns start to blow things up. They knew it was going to happen eventually. They said, why wait? We're doing it now. My guess is that Bears fans are even a little antsier than maybe they were before this week began after seeing McAdoo and Reese sacked in New York and now Shashi Brown today. Are the Bears falling behind the eight ball here? What's kind of your take? Is there any connection between these at all?
No, Bears fans need to understand there's absolutely no correlation between what happened in New York and Cleveland and what's happening in Chicago. And the reason is because I would be stunned if Ryan Pace got canned. Ryan Pace, I believe, is going to be retained, maybe more authority than he's had at any point, a chance to hire a second coach. And that, and Mitch Trubisky, is what he's eventually going to be judged on. The Giants fired both their GM and their coach. The Cleveland Browns inexplicably have decided to keep their 1-27 Hugh Jackson, but they fired their GM as well. And so they've got to find a GM before they can hire a coach. They've got to catch up to the Bears. It's not the Bears trying to keep up with them.
Yeah, if Bears fans need some solace in watching this awful offense every week, Hugh Jackson today was asked why he didn't hire an offensive coordinator, and he said it's because he didn't see the talent. He didn't think that offensive coordinator was going to have a chance. That's a top five paid offensive line the Browns have, and they have three first-round skill players out wide and at tight end. So I guess it just kind of jogged my memory because Hugh Jackson's still busy throwing anyone he can find under the bus, and I just think it's going to be kind of a weird dynamic now, all these young dudes that are supposed to be part of the core, the future, and apparently Hugh doesn't think any of them have enough talent to where he could hire an offensive coordinator and they'd have a shot. So I don't know how Hugh Jackson does it, Hub, but we'll get a chance to see him come into Soldier Field here on Christmas Eve.
And I will tell you, Arthur, and this is me patting us on the back, but we reported at Pro Football Weekly 2 years ago that Hugh Jackson would be a questionable hire for the Cleveland Browns because he left Oakland after an 8-8 season with a reputation as one of the great politicians in the NFL coaching business, that there'd always be an answer, always be an excuse, and always somebody else to blame. And here we are, he's got a 1-27 football team, and somehow other people are getting fired and he's not. So I guess maybe it's sour comfort, if you will, but you know what, Bears fans? You could be a Cleveland Browns fan.
All right, well, we'll see the Bears take on the Bengals Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium, the second longest tenured coach in the NFL, and Marvin Lewis, and it sounds like he's going to be out too. So, you know, it'll be interesting, I suppose. The Bengals are super banged up, and maybe it's an opportunity for the Bears to get that elusive fourth victory. We will wait and see, and we'll be talking about that and plenty more on next week's Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish. Make sure you check us out on iTunes and subscribe to this podcast and our three others at PFW, and leave us a rating and a review while you're there. We really appreciate you. We hope you enjoy Week 14 in the NFL, and thanks again for being with us. We'll talk to you real soon.